Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing? I got an awesome show for you guys. Obviously, last night was the Democratic Town Hall in Iowa. We got Martin O'Malley talking about hog farmers and whatnot. Not that I'm covering that because it's Martin O'Malley, so who gives a shit? But we got some Bernie. We got some Hillary. We'll discuss that. I'll give you my opinion on who won. And later on in the show, I'm not all about the town hall today. I got maybe 5-6 stories about that. And then later on, we got President Obama making a great move, actually, in my opinion. He decided that it's enough with solitary confinement and specifically with children. So he took a – I'm not sure if it was an executive action or what it was specifically, but he took steps to close it. And shut that down without even going through Congress, which actually makes sense. Some people might say, or they would argue, that it's unconstitutional. But the reality is that spending bills need to originate in the House. This is not a spending bill. You could shut down solitary confinement via executive order because it doesn't cost any money. You just say, hey, stop doing that. So it's a great move. He wrote a great op-ed. We're going to break down some of it and discuss that. We have a hilarious conclusion to the whole Planned Parenthood fiasco. If you guys remember that recently there was the bullshit scandal, non-scandal, about how they're selling baby parts slash not selling baby parts at all, but liars were saying that they were selling baby parts. A hilarious, hilarious conclusion to that story. Just know that, of course, when all the facts are seen, Planned Parenthood cleared of any wrongdoing, and wait until you hear what happens next. And then later on in the show, if we have time, I got some stuff on a disheartening gun situation in America. We'll see if we can squeeze that in. Hopefully we can, man, because it's yet another example. It's a uniquely American story about how we treat our guns and what the ramifications are of that. So let's go ahead and jump into it. First, let's discuss a little bit who won. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Martin O'Malley faced off in the Iowa town hall, or an Iowa town hall event, and the conclusion that I take away from it is very similar to every other debate that we've had so far or forum that we've had so far. I think Bernie came away looking the best. I think Hillary was a solid number two, and I think Martin O'Malley was dead last, almost to the point of I don't even know why we're bothering mentioning him. And again, I try my best to put my bias aside when I observe these things. I try to see it through the eyes of your run-of-the-mill Democratic voter. And even when I do that, I come away thinking, I don't know how anybody could watch this and not say that Bernie Sanders won. So that's my takeaway. That was my similar takeaway to the other debates. Some I think Bernie won by more, some I think less. Last night I think he won pretty handily. And I think that's the case because of the forum. When you give Bernie Sanders an open-ended time frame and just more leeway to answer a question however he wants and to go into details and specifics about what he wants to do, I think people hear that and they go, oh, all the stuff that Republicans say about you and all the stuff that even Hillary Clinton says about you, not so sure it's true, because all the attacks against him have been ridiculous. You know, whether it's Hillary going after him over being inexperienced on foreign policy and stuff like that, or it's the Republicans saying, ooh, ooga booga socialism, be afraid. That's not an argument, man. Like, they're just throwing mud at him and hoping something sticks because he's surging in the polls and people are beginning to hear him out and agree with his message. So Bernie was fantastic on substance, but also he came across as very likable yesterday. So one of the things that he did is, in the midst of giving a substantive answer, he would tell Chris Cuomo, the moderator, like, "Shh, I'm trying to get to earn this nice young lady's vote," when he was trying to explain his position on Planned Parenthood. And he mentioned how he had 100% approval rating from them because there was a mountain made out of a molehill with a recent comment he said about Planned Parenthood being the establishment. Now, naturally, what he meant was Planned Parenthood backs Hillary Clinton because the leadership, the establishment at Planned Parenthood, decides who they're going to endorse. His point was, if you let the actual people who work at Planned Parenthood, you have some sort of group vote from within the company, that people are going to overwhelmingly say, yeah, Bernie Sanders. That was his point, but it was misconstrued as if he's anti-Planned Parenthood, which is ridiculous. He spoke a little bit about his parents and, you know, and by the way, again, this was after he was asked about it. He doesn't just volunteer personal shit because he cares about policy substance, and that's why he's running. So he's not just talking about me, only when he's directly asked about something. And Chris Cuomo said, hey, we spoke to your brother earlier on CNN or yesterday on CNN, and, you know, he said your mom and dad would be so proud, and Bernie kind of got choked up a little bit and said, yeah, it's amazing that I'm even in the place where I am, where I'm running. And it was touching. It was touching. And again, this was all just sprinkled in the midst of a smorgasbord of nothing but policy substance thrown in your face about every single goddamn topic. So I think he did the best. Now, Martin O'Malley was a disaster. I mean, every single thing about him was insufferable last night. His fake politician rhythm and cadence and inflection and way of speaking is somehow getting worse as time goes on. I didn't think it was possible, but it is. Everything is so contrived and so, you know, put through the machine of how to be a sleazy, cheesy politician, to the point where he quite literally, it was like, is it okay if I stand up? And then he stands up, because you have the option, I guess, of sitting or standing up. I don't know why you wouldn't sit most of the time. But he gets up, and he literally takes off his jacket and rolls up his sleeves. Like, can you be more fake? It's so obvious he had a meeting with his staffers, and they're like, okay, how do we appeal to the regular guy? Well, you can't just wear your jacket and sit down. You got to get personal, so stand up and roll up your sleeves. But it comes across as the exact opposite. That's what they miss, man. The days of the slimy politicians, it's through. It's through. Nobody's going to look at you and go, oh, yeah, he seems more genuine because he did what is the opposite of genuine, what is obviously planned out. He mentioned fucking hog farmers. Why would you mention hog farmers? Well, the answer is simple, because in Iowa they have hog farmers. So he's trying to pander and get really specific to voters in Iowa to try to win in Iowa. Dude, it's not going to work. Everything you're trying is a trick. Now, don't get me wrong. He's not bad on when you actually listen to his ideas. He's not bad at all. In fact, I'd say he's better than Hillary Clinton. And there's an argument that he might even be better than Bernie on climate change. I know that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like that I say that, but he seems to focus on that issue more than anybody. Okay, so he's not wrong on a lot of the shit he says. But it's hard to believe him when everything about him is so contrived and over the top and not real. You're not a person. You're not acting like a person. So he did horrendous. Now, Hillary, believe it or not, I do have some good stuff to say. The good stuff I have to say is everything outside of policy substance, she's peaking. She's running on all cylinders, man. And I know a lot of people don't like that I'm going to say that, but it's true. I mean, when you look at how she talks and her rhythm and how she controls a room, she's actually become, over the years, a masterful politician. I don't think she was that back in the day. And when I say politician, I don't mean in the Martin O'Malley, sleazy, obviously fake sense. I mean, she's mastered the art of being a politician without coming across like a politician in how she talks. And she knows how to command a room and get attention in a positive way. So all of the things divorced from or detached from substance, Hillary was spot on. When you get to the policy substance, obviously Hillary was the worst of the three. She was the most hawkish on foreign policy. She was the worst on, you know, issues involving Wall Street and regulation and stuff for the middle class. And, of course, she spoke out of both sides of her mouth, as she usually does. In one breath says, oh, we should use military as last resort. And the next breath says, hey, we should lead around the world. Which is it? It's one or the other. You got to pick. Come on. Get the fuck out of here. So it was a mix with her, but on substance she was bad. And that's why I think Bernie wins, because he was charming and he was right on substance. All right. Now, let me move along here. And we can jump into some specific clips and whatnot. Bernie Sanders was asked about his democratic socialism at last night's town hall event in Iowa. Let's watch.
Yes, Senator, some of your detractors have called you a socialist on occasions, and you don't seem too troubled by that, and sometimes embrace it. I wondered if you could elaborate on that, and just to show us what the comfort level you have, your definition of it, so that it doesn't concern the rest of us citizens.
Well, what democratic socialism means to me is that economic rights, the right for economic security, it should exist in the United States of America. It means to me that there's something wrong when we have millions of senior citizens today trying to get by on $11,000, $12,000 a year Social Security. It means there's something wrong when the rich get richer and almost everybody else gets poor. It means there is something wrong, and government should play a role in making sure that all of our kids, regardless of their income, are able to get a higher education, which is why I'm calling for free tuition at public colleges and universities, and why we have to deal with this horrendous level of student debt that people are having. Now, what's going on in countries around the world, in Scandinavia and in Germany, the ideas that I am talking about are not radical ideas. So what democratic socialism means to me in its essence is that we cannot continue to have a government dominated by the billionaire class and a Congress that continues to work for the interest of the people on top while ignoring working families. What this campaign is about and what I believe in is creating a government that works for all of us, not just a handful of people on the top. That's my definition of democratic socialism.
Yeah, he nailed that. And this is why I think this forum was so good for him, because he got a little bit more time to explain himself in detail without getting cut off or only having a minute quick rebuttal to anything somebody might ask or say. And when you give him a little bit of room, he's going to come strong and he's going to be very accurate, and he's probably going to convince you, even if you're somebody who, you know, isn't prone to agreeing with left-wing ideas up front. If you actually pay attention, a lot of the things he says, even Republicans can agree with. So I'm not denying that democratic socialism, or the term socialism, it's got a mixed history in the U.S., man. So on the one hand, right now it's actually polling higher than capitalism among millennials, according to some polls that came out a few years ago. But then also, in terms of favorability, it's one of the lowest, in that more Americans would not vote for a socialist than anybody else, they say. So it's a mixed thing, and people still have kind of remnants of the Red Scare and the Soviet Union. Some people just associate the term socialism with government control of everything in your life in a negative way, and it's kind of authoritarianism by definition. That's how they think of it. But that's not true, and a guy like Bernie Sanders is like, no, listen, Scandinavia, Germany, a lot of places in Europe, this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a system where it's kind of like what we already have, except instead of taking our tax money and putting it towards endless war overseas and corporate welfare here at home and having a government rigged for the rich, I want the government to work for all Americans. And I want it to be, you know, focused on economic security and free college tuition, and I want to stop billionaire domination and them owning our country. I want universal health care. I just want to prioritize in a more sane and rational way. And so he was spot on. I would have actually went a little further and been more clear, though, that what we have today in the U.S. already has elements of socialism. All of the stuff that the Democrats and the Republicans like, you can call it socialism, whether it's the military, whether it's Social Security, whether it's roads and bridges or police officers or the fire department. I mean, all of these things funded by the government, according to one definition, that is by definition socialism. It's one area, in the entire economy and in the entire country where you say, okay, that thing is socialist. All he's talking about is being more sane in our priorities and how we allocate our funds and make it so that the government represents everybody and not just the rich, and we actually pay for shit collectively that makes sense. what socialism is not is communism or Marxism or, you know, collectivism in every realm. It's not taking away your individual rights and liberties. It's not saying you can't open a small business. It's not saying you can't be an entrepreneur. It's saying let's do this balancing act in a more sane way. That's what he's arguing for. And I think that he did a good job of making that clear. And when people hear that, they're going to go, oh, so it's more complex than just the boogeyman narrative that the people on the right make up. And that even Hillary Clinton is starting to play into now, or in other ways she attacks him, talking about, oh, experience, and, you know, let's, and even Obama weighed in recently, and he said something like, well, you know, you got to transfer these ideals and these ideas into governance. In other words, let's be more practical and pragmatic here and buckle on almost everything to the Republicans and do half measures and work within the immensely corrupt system. Bernie comes along and says, no, I'm going to try to stop that corruption and change that system and actually get us, at least even with other modern nations that have gone above and beyond us in terms of healthcare and education and on so many other fronts. So he did a fantastic job explaining that. And in short, the point is, hey, Bernie, what's your democratic socialism about? The answer is you're going to like it, and you're going to like it a lot, and it's a more sane system than we have right now. Okay, next. And I would argue, man, as I've done before, but, like, I would argue that the it's not Bernie Sanders who's the radical. It's the people who are attacking Bernie Sanders that are the radicals. Why? Because they're doing, effectively, apologetics for a system where millions of people don't have health insurance, for a system where 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. They're doing apologetics for a $1 trillion student loan debt crisis. They're doing apologetics for an unregulated derivatives market, which can go haywire any second and crash and bring the economy with it. They're doing apologetics for a system that funds perpetual war while it says we can't fund clean water in Detroit. That's not a debatable thing, man. That's not like, hey, Bernie Sanders is a radical and the people arguing for the way the system works now are pragmatic or practical. It's one side are corrupt idiots, and the other side, Bernie, that represents sane people trying to actually make the country better. That's what it really boils down to. Now, we go to the straw men. Oh, boy, here we go. Bernie was viciously attacked here in a taken out of context kind of way after he said this by the media. Bernie Sanders spoke about his healthcare plan at the Dem Town Hall yesterday, and he was viciously attacked and taken out of context by the mainstream media. So let's watch, and then I'll explain what happened.
To pay for this, what you're really asking for is one of the biggest tax hikes in history. And that is the criticism.
But Chris, that is an unfair criticism for the following reason. If you are paying now $10,000 a year to a private health insurance company, and I say to you hypothetically, you're going to pay $5,000 more in taxes, or actually less than that, but you're not going to pay any more private health insurance, are you going to be complaining about the fact that I saved you $5,000 in your total bills? So it's demagogic to say, oh, you're paying more in taxes. Let's also talk about we're going to eliminate private health insurance premiums and payments, not only for individuals, but for businesses as well. Again, we are the only country on earth that allows private insurance companies to rip us off. We spend three times more than the British, 50% more than the French. We can do better than we're doing right now.
But just to be clear, you are going to raise taxes to do this.
Yes, we will raise taxes. Yes, we will. But also let us be clear, Chris, because there's a little bit of this ingenuity out there. We may raise taxes, but we are also going to eliminate private health insurance premiums for individuals and for business. All right.
Okay, so you saw the full context there, and what he's saying is crystal clear. He's like, yeah, you're not going to have to pay private insurance anymore, which they're price gouging you in, and this is why we're paying more than any other modern country by 50% or more. So you're not going to have to pay that anymore, but yeah, we're going to have a single-payer system, which means Medicare for all, which means that your health care is now going to be paid for via taxes. Now, you're net going to be paying less because you're not going to be paying the price-gouging private insurance anymore, but you're going to be paying through taxes for your health care, and it's less. So I'm net saving you money. How did the media spin this afterwards? On CNN and on MSNBC, the so-called liberal network, the headline was, quote, "We will raise taxes. Yes, we will. Bernie Sanders." That was the headline. We will raise taxes. Yes, we will. Not only is that out of context, that is like the clearest example I've ever seen of out of context, to the point where it's so misleading as to be a lie. No, that's not a fair summation of what the dude said. You just saw the full context. You're going to be saving money. Saving. What taste does that leave in your mouth? We will raise taxes. Yes, we will.
Big bad government socialist is going to come take your money and steal it.
No. The system we have right now is the problem where people are stealing from you. The price gouging health insurance companies are stealing from you. This is why we pay way more than any other modern nation and we get worse health outcomes. Because they're padding their bottom line and you got CEOs at the top buying yachts and mansions and whatnot. You have a lot of money going to overhead and paperwork and not as much going towards actual care. Bernie says, let's cut out the for-profit middleman. I'll save you money. And we raise taxes as we take away your price-gouging private insurance payments. But they sum it up with, we will raise taxes. Yes, we will. That's how they sum it up. Now, guys, I'm not a conspiracy theorist of any sort here, but I follow facts. And what I noticed there after watching this clip four times, Chris Cuomo asked the question. Bernie gave a very detailed answer. And then they came back to Chris Cuomo, and what did he say? Just to be clear, so you're saying you will raise taxes. And then Bernie says, yes, we will raise taxes. But then he clarifies again, but we'll be cutting your private insurance payments. They won't exist anymore, so you're net going to be saving money. They don't add that part. All the headlines are, we will raise taxes. Yes, we will. They've stooped to the point where they're just effectively lying to you to try to cut this wave, this momentum, this surge in favor of Bernie Sanders. It's beyond grotesque. And by the way, there were planted questions last night. We're going to get to that in a second. Hillary did this once before, talking to Chris Matthews years ago, where, you know, somebody asked a question and winked at her after she asked it. There were 100% there were planted questions yesterday. The idea that the establishment is in favor of Hillary Clinton is not a conspiracy. You don't need a formal conspiracy when like interests converge. Hillary Clinton is the establishment. She has a track record of representing the establishment. Should it be any surprise to anybody that the fucking establishment media is backing her up and they're doing little things here and there in order to try to push her campaign forward? Yet again, we got people declaring her the winner before any polls came out about anything. Oh, she won. Why? I say so. That's why. And I'm in the mainstream, and she's in the mainstream. I'm establishment. She's establishment. I say she won. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. This isn't objective. This isn't tough questioning. I support all that. I support objectivity and really tough questions against everybody. But this is just dishonest. This is just dishonest. And the liberal network, MSNBC, they wonder, why are we stuck in the ratings? Why have we not been good in the ratings at all recently? And why are progressives and liberals fleeing us? Gee, I wonder why. Could it be because you're actively misleading people about the most progressive candidate? No, couldn't be that.
Unbelievable. All right, next. Oh, I got to take a break. Fuck that. All right, when we come back, Bernie Sanders sums up why he thinks people should vote for him. Then we'll get to Hillary, and then later on, President Obama about solitary confinement. He makes a very positive move. We'll discuss that and much more. Stay right there, guys. All right, we're back, y'all. Let's move right along here. We got one more on Bernie. Let's do it. Bernie Sanders summed up why he thinks voters should consider him at last night's Democratic town hall. Let's watch.
You got 30 seconds. Tell the voters of Iowa what you want them to know. Look, Hillary Clinton is a very good person. Martin O'Malley is a very decent guy. So I'm not, you know, this is not a personal stuff. It just seems to me that the crises that we face as a country today, and we didn't even get into climate change to a significant degree, inequality, poverty in America, an obscene and unfair campaign finance system, these problems are so serious that we have got to go beyond establishment politics and establishment economics
In my view, we need a political revolution where millions of people stand up and say, you know what, that great government of ours belongs to all of us, not just the few. That's why I'm running for president. Thank you.
When people are curious and they don't know why Bernie Sanders has surged in the polls, show them this. You show them that clip. Because it's a clear example of why he is surging. He hit all the major issues. He said climate change, which is one of the biggest issues, if not the biggest issues, not only facing the U.S., but facing the world. Inequality, we just had the report recently that the richest 62 people on the planet have more than the bottom 50% of the planet. 62 people, more than 3.5 billion people. That just makes no sense. That's just beyond idiotic, and it's a system that's not sustainable. We spoke about poverty in the U.S. This is another big issue that politicians rarely talk about. Even on the left, most politicians on the left, the furthest they'll go is talk about the middle class, which is a good thing. You should talk about the middle class. Now there's, as Tom Hartman puts it, an undeclared war on the middle class. But you got to talk about poverty, too. Bernie Sanders is one of very few politicians that still does that. And then one of the biggest, if not the biggest issue, campaign finance. I mean, this is everything, because you can't seriously address any of the other issues unless and until you get money out of the political system. This is why we effectively have an oligarchy, according to Princeton political science researchers. This is big money, Wall Street, the lobbyists, billionaires. They get their way. The American people have almost no say in what their government does. So people wonder why, hey, how's this guy? This guy was 40 points, 50 points back just a few months ago. Now he's only 10 points back nationally. He's winning in some polls in Iowa, and he's winning by a mile in New Hampshire? I don't get it. Well, this is why. Because Hillary Clinton, while she puts on some decent rhetoric sometimes in the primary season, she ain't hammering on the biggest issues. How can she honestly make the case that she's against big money in politics when she is one of the biggest beneficiaries of big money in politics? You can't make that argument. And this is what Sanders said. We need to, quote, go beyond establishment politics. He's hammering the establishment. He's harping away on campaign finance. And this is why he's surging. And also, by the way, it's worth mentioning that this is why Donald Trump is surging, too, one of the many reasons. I mean, obviously, he's authoritarian in nature, and he's confident, and he's got this bravado that the Republican base loves, and he contradicts himself all the time, which is not something that holds you back in a Republican primary. On the contrary, it actually might help you, because people just read into what you're saying whatever the fuck they want to hear. But one of the things he's consistently spoken about is corruption. He's like, hey, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, are they puppets of the billionaires? Well, they just gave them money. You decide. Yeah, that argument is going to work, even if it's insincere from Donald, in the sense that Donald tried to get money from billionaires, and they rejected him, and then he started attacking the billionaires. But that mess, people don't know that. So when Donald starts hitting the establishment, as he did in a recent ad, and lobbyists, people go, oh, that guy's for the people. And people look at Bernie, they say, that guy's for the people. So this is why these guys are doing so well. But the establishment politicians are clueless. They're clueless.
Like, I don't get it. I don't understand why Donald's doing well. I don't understand why Bernie's doing well. Look how old he is. He says he's a fucking socialist. I don't get it. How's he doing well?
Because you're not issues-based. That's why you don't get it. You play the game of politics. You don't actually care about the issues that affect people's lives. Bernie Sanders does, so he can talk about those issues and tap into something that you can't – not only can you not tap into it, you can't even fucking see it. So we'll see if this lasts. We'll see if the surge continues. But, with the media against him and the big moneyed interests against him, it's going to be a hard uphill battle. But the message itself is strong enough, and it certainly can resonate, and people need to get behind it and fight for it. Okay, next. Now we go to Hillary. Hillary Clinton was asked a question about Bernie Sanders' overwhelming support among young voters compared to her weak support among young voters. And here's how she responded.
But I'm totally happy to see young people involved in any way. That's what we want. And we want to have a good primary to pick a nominee, and then we want to have everybody join together to make sure we win in November, which, after all, is the purpose of this whole campaign. And so, you know, look, I've been around a long time. People have thrown all kinds of things at me. And, you know, I can't keep up with it. I just keep going forward. They fall by the wayside. They come up with these outlandish things. They make these charges. I just keep going forward because there's nothing to it. They throw all this stuff at me, and I'm still standing. But if you're new to politics, if it's the first time you've really paid attention, you go, oh, my gosh, look at all of this. And you have to say to yourself, why are they throwing all of that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because I've been on the front lines of change and progress since I was your age. I have been fighting to give kids and women and the people who are left out and left behind a chance to make the most out of their own lives. And I've taken on the status quo time and time again. I've had many, many millions of dollars spent against me. When I worked on health care back in 93 and 94, and I don't know if you were born then. I can't quite tell. But if you'd been around and had been able to pay attention, I was trying to get us to universal health care coverage working with my husband. Boy, the insurance companies, the drug companies, they spent millions, not just against the issue, but against me. And I kept going. And when we weren't successful, I turned around and said, at least we're going to get health care for kids. And we got the Children's Health Insurance Program working with both Democrats and Republicans, and 8 million kids have insurance because of that today. So you've got to keep going. You can't give up. You can never get knocked off course.
Yeah, except you did. So she's saying, well, you know, back in the day, I was for universal health care. I fought for it. That's true. That's true. In the early 1990s, she was, and she did fight for it. Then what happened? Then the industry threw tremendous amounts of money at her, and she changed her position. Now she argues against Medicare for All. She argues against single payer. We've shown this chart before, but let's show it again here. This is from The Intercept. They counted. This is only for, I think, a two-year time span in between when she left as Secretary of State and then when she decided she's going to run for president. Look at this. She made $2.8 million from 13 speeches to the health insurance industry. Or, I'm sorry, just to the health industry in general. So this includes all different kinds of companies that are associated with the health industry. It's not just health insurance. But this is why she's to the right of Bernie. This is why she's pro-corporatist now. Because she's had tremendous amounts of money thrown at her by these corporations. So she's more likely to listen to them and do what they want, even if that's not in the best interest of the American people. And this is actually the answer to that guy's question. When he asks, well, hey, I see a lot of enthusiasm about Bernie, but really not that much around you. Well, this is why. Because young voters, millennial voters who are paying attention, they see this stuff and they go, oh, I see. She's the establishment candidate who's going to give us 5% change. Bernie's the guy who's going to push for 95% change to try to make your life better. So she's a fantastic politician in the sense that she can control the room. She doesn't come across overly fake like Martin O'Malley. Everything except the substance from Hillary is on point. But the substance is just, you know, it's you know, half-truths and misleading statements and not the total picture. And you know, based on her history and her actions, that she's willing to sell out to industry. So that's the problem. But look at the rest of what she answered there, too, because she said at the beginning, I'm happy that young voters are involved in any way. No, you're not. Don't stop. Just stop. Oh, really? So if all the young voters get involved and they all go behind Bernie, you'd love that, right? No, you want support for you. Just admit it. Acknowledge it. And then she pivots to make it all about her. And people attack me and they keep attacking me, but I'm still here. Quote, I'm still standing. Me, 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 me. This is exactly the
opposite of what Bernie Sanders does. Everything. You ask Bernie Sanders a question on one policy issue, he'll pivot to policy substance on 12 issues, okay? Whereas Hillary's, me, okay, I'm still standing, me, this is why they attack me. And then, I don't know if you saw it, it was a nice little sleight of hand trick, she goes to, people attack me because I fight for the people. Yeah, but wait, the original question which you were answering was about why is there such strong support from millennial voters and young voters for Bernie Sanders and not for you? And then all of a sudden you pivot to people attack me because I fight for the people? So you're saying that the people who are supporting Bernie Sanders over you, these young voters who are going for him over you and are attacking you, people like myself, for example, that no, I'm attacking Hillary because she fights for the people. No, I'd love it if you fought for the people. I'm attacking you because ever since you started taking corporate donations, you do the opposite of that. You're just like your husband, or you're just like President Obama. No doubt you'd be better than Rick Santorum or Mike Huckabee or Ted Cruz or Donald Trump in office. I'm not disputing that in any way, shape, or form. But are you going to be as good as a guy like Bernie Sanders? No. And am I attacking you because you fight for the people? Fuck no. I praise you when you do that. I'm attacking you because you don't care as much about the policy substance, and you don't want to do the biggest, most important fundamental change to the system, which is campaign finance reform, which would make it so that the politicians no longer represent industry over people. So that's the problem, Hillary. Totally unsatisfying answer, as usual, because it's just not coming from the right place. Okay, Bernie has a track record of it, decades fighting for serious liberal changes in the country. Hillary, on the other hand, on again, off again. She's better on the social issues sometimes, even though it took her a long time to come around on gay marriage. But on economic issues, she's buddy-buddy with Wall Street just like any of the Republicans are. All right, next. Let's do the final one on the debate here. There are allegations that Hillary Clinton planted some questions at the Dem Town Hall in Iowa last night. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss whether or not it is indeed planted.
Clinton, sorry. I can see why they gave you this question. I just wanted to know which of our previous presidents has inspired you most and why.
You can only pick one. One you can pick. Sorry, let me jump your question.
You know what?
One president.
Right.
One.
Okay.
Just one.
Okay. Sorry, President Obama. Sorry, Bill. Abraham Lincoln.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't see where the debate is. I mean, that's obvious. That's obvious. Now, I said at the time, I was tweeting about it, I thought Martin O'Malley planted a question, too. Now, I don't think all the questions for all the candidates were planted. No, I think on the contrary. None of the ones from Bernie struck me as planted at all. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed one. Martin O'Malley, there were one or two I saw. With Hillary, there were some where they obviously weren't planted, okay? But this one was absolutely planted. There's no doubt about that. She also had a history where she did this once in the past when she did some sort of an event, I think the last time she ran for president, with Chris Matthews, where people would ask, somebody asked a question and winked at her afterwards. Here I am reading the question you would like me to read. No, you don't want me to read this. I'm asking this. The guy said, quote, I can see why they gave you this question. Yeah, why is everybody debating? I don't see a debate. I can see why they gave you this question. What does that mean? It means he slipped up. He got all anxious and he was like, Secretary Sanders. And so he messed up. He's all flustered. And then he's like, I can see why they gave you this question. It slipped out. And then also another little hint here is you notice how quickly Chris Cuomo jumped in, where the kid asked the question and it wasn't sure if he was talking about one president or presidents, plural. And so Chris Cuomo's like, oh, no, one president, one. He meant one. Why is he doing that? Because, you know, he probably has it written down in front of him that the Hillary campaign came up with this question, planted it with the kid asked the question, and he goes, and so he knows. If anybody messes up, you got the backup right here. I think what he's trying to say is one president, one, one, one. It's so obvious, and it's so contrived, and it's so fake. I mean, is anybody really surprised? And actually, I mean, to be clear, she gave a pretty good answer, but that's expected when you planted the fucking question. And she said, sorry, Obama, sorry, Bill, talking about her husband, Abraham Lincoln. Why? He freed the slaves. That's it. I mean, that's a legit question. I mean, how can you not go with George Washington or Abraham Lincoln? I guess you have to go with, I mean, her husband is the president. I made a joke that got me in so much shit last night. I said Hillary is going to give Bill a sloppy blowjob to make up for the fact that you didn't pick him for best president. Oh, the cries of sexism from the Hillary bots. How dare you acknowledge that blowjobs exist and Bill and Hillary are married and she probably sucks his dick from time to time. That's sexist. Blowjobs and marriage are sexist. Calm down. See, they do that because they can't discuss policy because they lose on those fronts. Sexism! You're sexist! It's a blowjob! Sexist! Sexist! Breathe. Not that big a deal. It's a joke. If you don't like it, take a hike. But, yeah, planted questions, no question about it. And either way, I still think that Bernie Sanders did the best of the night. Hillary's always good with all the non-substantive things, the way she talks, how commanding she is. You know, there's no doubt a lot of Democrats like her, no question about it. But on the substance, she's so much worse than Bernie that Bernie always has that upper hand because he keeps hammering you with substance. And on top of that, Bernie was charming last night because he joked around every now and then. He was asked a question about his family, so he had to answer about his family. He got a little emotional. So definitely planted questions. And now we got news right before I came on air. We learned that they're planning another debate in New Hampshire. Why? Because Hillary's down tremendously in New Hampshire, and she wants to try to fight back. So there was this unscheduled debate that they're going to do in New Hampshire, and look out, because there's some funny business going on there, too. Look for them to be extra tough on Sanders and extra lenient towards Hillary. Hear me now, quote me later. Okay, next. All right, I got a anti-Bernie ad from the Republicans that we're going to cover. Then we'll probably take a break and come back and get into all the non-debate stuff, or town hall, I should say. A conservative group released an attack ad against Bernie in Iowa, and it's really bad. And they don't even realize that they're helping him here.
Bernie Sanders has some very big plans. Bernie wants to provide free college for our young people. No tuition, completely free. Now Bernie's doubling down with Medicare for All, which is basically single-payer, government-sponsored health care. No big insurance companies, just more government spending, paid for by raising taxes on Wall Street, big business, and the super rich. Senator Bernie Sanders, too liberal for Iowa. He is 100% responsible for the content of this ad.
You idiots! What are you doing? That was a completely accurate portrayal of what he wants to do. And it sounds awesome. They're like, he wants free college. Free. Free. He wants Medicare for All. Huh! Medicare for All. No big insurance companies anymore. God, aren't you going to miss those big insurance companies that price gouge the shit out of you? Ugh, gross. And to pay for it, he wants to raise taxes on the rich and on Wall Street. Yuck. Don't we love it when Wall Street robs us? What? What? Oh, my God, you guys are so dumb. You guys are so dumb. That I have no bones to pick with that ad. I have no bones to pick with it. It was totally accurate. It was totally on point. And people are going to watch that and go, pretty sure those things are not that bad. Look, even if you are a far-right Republican,
you're going to walk away from that going, that wasn't much of an attack, was it? Why? Because look at the polling data. I mean, over 80% of Republicans want to get money out of politics. This is something that Bernie Sanders fights for. We saw signs at the Tea Party events back in like 2010. Get your government hands off my Medicare. So when you frame it as Medicare for all, you're doing his work for him. You're supposed to say, socialized medicine. These guys don't even know how to play politics, this conservative group. They're like, be totally accurate about what he wants to do, and then people will want to vote for him. No, they're going to want to vote for him when they hear that shit. A lot of his ideas. Guys, newsflash, the right-wing base doesn't like Wall Street either. Sometimes they're exploited as useful idiots for their purposes, but they don't like Wall Street. They don't like the uber rich. You think they like it when George Soros buys Democratic politicians? No, they fucking hate that. So when you have rhetoric from a Democratic politician against Wall Street, and he's actually principled in that respect, and he tells you instead of paying for X, Y, and Z and them getting big tax breaks, let's have health care and education, even people who are against him viscerally are going to go, that's not that bad of an idea, actually. I can maybe think about that. What an epic fail of an ad. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking, but it's adorable. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Let me do one more. Yeah, let me do one more, and then we'll take a break. And when we come back, I'll get into that Obama story about how he's trying to end solitary confinement for juveniles. Very interesting story. But first, let's mock the anti-abortion crowd. An investigation was launched into Planned Parenthood after that recent so-called sting video, and it turns out that they were cleared of any wrongdoing. Now, that's expected for people who followed the fact-checkers during this debate about Planned Parenthood, but in a hilarious plot twist, not only was there a lack of an indictment of Planned Parenthood, a grand jury actually turned the tables and indicted the anti-abortion activists. Okay, I believe in the business we call that an epic fail. David DeLeiden and Sandra Merritt have been indicted by the grand jury for tampering with a government record, said prosecutors for the county in which Houston is located. The two were involved in covert videos last year in which a discussion was held with a Planned Parenthood official on the procurement of fetal tissue. DeLeiden, founder of the Center for Medical Progress, which, by the way, is a made-up right-wing group that sounds official, but in reality they're just anti-abortion hacks who lie, founder of the Center for Medical Progress that released the videos, was also charged with violating a prohibition on the purchase and sale of human organs, a misdemeanor, the Harris County District Attorney said. Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's so funny. So, for those of you who don't know the story in detail, what happened is you had this group pretending to be a serious science-based medical research group that's trying to find cures for diseases. They go to Planned Parenthood and they discuss how they can get fetal tissue to try to do more research to cure diseases. Now, the reality is they ain't science-based, they ain't medical researchers, and which means, effectively, they tried to buy fetal tissue. Now, Planned Parenthood was operating under the assumption, these guys are medical researchers. What do you mean? Of course I'm going to talk to them. Of course I'm going to give them the fetal tissue. They discussed money, but the right-wingers spun it as, oh, they're selling it for profit. See, we got you. You're selling dead babies for profit. How morally abhorrent. In reality, they were donating fetal tissue for scientific research, and it was only about transportation costs. That's what the money was, just for reimbursement for transportation of fetal tissue. So there was no crime committed whatsoever by Planned Parenthood. This is the same process you'd go through if somebody's really trying to cure a disease and they need fetal tissue to do research. But they weren't actually trying to cure diseases, so they were just trying to buy fetal tissue, which is a crime. So they're indicted for that crime. Oh, that irony tastes so sweet. backfired in the most epic way. Believe you me? Huh, what, you think the people on the right now are going to go, okay, look, we stand corrected. Planned Parenthood, a grand jury in Texas. Is that a liberal place? They're like, yeah, no, Planned Parenthood did nothing wrong. So are people on the right going to go, no, fair is fair. They did nothing wrong. This was adjudicated, okay? And I guess the people lied and cheated and went about this the wrong way, trying to set him up. And, hey, I might still be anti-abortion, but this whole fiasco was nonsense. Believe you me, they ain't going to do that. They're going to double down. They're going to triple down. But the Texas grand jury's liberal bias conspiracy something, trying to take down the heroes who are fighting for the little baby. But none of that is true, man. That's what we've been trying to tell you from day one. Did you know that these abortion clinics, that they're even, or Planned Parenthood, which only 3% of what they do is abortion, these places where they're attacking, they don't even do late-term abortions. So, look, I get it. If you don't like late-term abortion, hey, I'm with you. Late-term abortion is already illegal in the United States. But they're attacking places that aren't doing late-term abortions. They do it when it's a zygote or a gamete or an embryo or a pre-gestation fetus and there's no pain involved whatsoever. So this is just a mucked-up fake issue. They're strawmanning Planned Parenthood. They're making it up that they're doing something really violent and immoral and wrong and it's murder, and which is why Planned Parenthood cleared of any wrongdoing and they were indicted. Anybody who was following this all along, their response is, oh, yeah, of course. That's what should happen. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, President Obama writes an op-ed about solitary confinement and takes action. And then we had a Christian fundamentalist radio host going after gays, and he does it in the saddest and most hilarious way where he doesn't realize what he's saying, but when you read into it a little bit, you go, oh, of course, he's super repressed. All right, stay right there. We got that and much more, guys. We'll be right back.
Took the midnight train.
son of a bitch.
We are back. We are back. And we're going to talk a little bit here about President Obama and what he's got going down. All right. President Obama wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post on the issue of solitary confinement. And he's decided he's against it, apparently, and he's taking action. He says, quote, "The Justice Department has completed its review, and I am adopting its recommendations to reform the federal prison system. These include banning solitary confinement for juveniles and as a response to low-level infractions, expanding treatment for the mentally ill, and increasing the amount of time inmates in solitary can spend outside of their cells. These steps will affect some 10,000 federal prisoners held in solitary confinement and hopefully serve as a model for state and local corrections systems." Okay, so he goes on to talk about the psychological damage that some of the studies are beginning to prove about what happens when people are in solitary confinement and how so many people who have been in solitary confinement, when they get out and then they get out of prison, they end up committing suicide. There's a whole bunch of troubling stuff around that, and some very smart people have said, it's kind of torture. We're talking about torture here. Well, I mean, humans are social animals. We're social beings. And if you lock them up in a cage and leave them there for 24 hours a day or an extended period of time, they lose touch with reality. And I think more importantly, you're compounding the problem. So if the whole idea of putting people in jail is to protect society, but also to give a chance of rehabilitation and to try to make people productive, normal citizens, well, you're going to make it worse if you lock them up in a room and throw away the key, and then you let them out a week later, whatever the fuck it is, and now the person's off their rocker. It's just, it's wrong on so many levels. And he's saying, for juveniles, done. It's over. No more solitary confinement for juveniles. And for low-level infractions, it's over. He didn't give specifics on what he means by low-level infractions. But this is good, and this is a step in the right direction. Now, there were parts of his piece where he said, in some cases, it is justified according to the judicial, the Justice Department review, because, you know, if there's a fight and it's to protect, you know, the security of one inmate or another inmate, or it's to cool off a situation that's gotten out of control or whatever, in those situations, it's okay. I hear you on that, but I think the response is, as long as it's super limited and regulated. So if you need to put somebody in solitary to protect them or protect somebody else because of a fight or this or that, you can work that out and figure it out together, you know, on a case-by-case basis. But if it's you're forcing somebody into that situation, should there be a limit on it, you know, a max of a few hours or something like that? Probably. There probably should be. And look, guys, I've said time and time again, I'm not like a pure down-the-line liberal or progressive on criminal justice issues. I fancy myself a moderate. You know, I think that the U.S. is far too punitive, and we don't care about rehabilitation nearly enough. But I think, in all seriousness, Scandinavia and places like that might be too lax and too lenient. And, you know, their idea of, in every case, you can never have a life sentence without the possibility of parole. I don't agree with that. Now, I know people say, just because you have the opportunity or the chance of a parole hearing doesn't mean they're actually going to grant parole. That's true. Don't get me wrong. But are there some crimes that are so heinous and some people that are so beyond rehabilitation that, yeah, it's the right thing to put them in jail and not even give the option of somebody perhaps fucking up down the road and letting them out? Yeah, I'm perhaps more conservative in that respect. So overall, I'm like a moderate on the issue of criminal justice. I think sometimes you just need rehabilitation for certain kinds of crimes. Probably most times you need a mix of rehabilitation and punishment. And then are there crimes that are so heinous that, you know, you should basically be locked up, treated humanely, but locked up for life? Yes. I'm guilty of that. So I'm a moderate on this issue. But to Obama's point here, I don't think this is disputable. To say, hey, this is cruel and unusual punishment to do solitary confinement for juveniles, yeah, you become the bad guy if you want to do that, when we know that this is psychologically damaging and it's basically torture. Okay? And to say, hey, for low-level infractions, you can't lock somebody up in a cage and keep them there for a week. Yeah, of course. You know, he goes on to point out in his piece, we started solitary in like the 1800s. And it was like a barbaric thing then, and it's still super barbaric today.
It's not like over time, just because we're used to it, it must not be as bad. No, it's pretty fucking bad. It's pretty fucking bad. So I would move away from solitary because it doesn't help the situation at all, and it leads to further damages, and it kind of reflects more on you than the prisoner. It reflects more on the system than the prisoner. You become a bad guy yourself when you do that stuff. So I agree with him on this. I'd probably go a little bit further in my crackdown, but perhaps he's doing all that he can do within the confines of being the president and not working through Congress and stuff. And just so everybody knows, what he's doing is constitutional, because some are saying executive overreach. That's not true. Spending bills have to originate in Congress. You don't need to spend anything to tell people you can't do that anymore. In federal prisons, you cannot do solitary anymore. Well within his abilities to do that. So I think he's right. I would have gone a little further, but at least we're moving a step in the right direction here with making our criminal justice system better. The next thing would be legalize, tax, and regulate all drugs. I won't hold my breath for that. But on marijuana, perhaps I will hold my breath because we're moving towards that, at least with that. Okay, now let's make fun of some crazy Christians here. Matt Staver is a Christian fundamentalist radio host, and he did a segment going after the gay community. I think this was actually a little radio ad that he did, and that for whatever reason he's playing on different stations. So he went after them for a curious reason, though. Let's listen, and then I'll explain exactly what he's saying.
Are homosexuals borrowing the Jesus tax for America? I am Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. We'll talk about this next on Freedom's Call. Deep in Islamic tradition is Jizya, a tax which forces non-Muslims to pay an exorbitant fee for living within a Muslim state. Now, from farmers in New York to those offering wedding cakes, photography, and other services, all have been fined thousands and sometimes more than $100,000 for having and acting on a religious belief that is different from homosexuals who demand their services. These fees and fines are an excess tax on Christians who are living out their faith and beliefs in the businesses that they have labored for and have built. In America, we should not fear paying a tax or fee to Muslims nor to homosexuals just because our faith is different from theirs.
Oh, that was adorable. Now, here's the part that had me laughing earlier. He mentions this Jizya tax. Are homosexuals doing a Jizya tax on Christians and non-homosexuals? Now, again, he goes on to explain, well, that's a tax where, under a literalist interpretation of Islam, people who are non-Muslims, Christians, and Jews, they pay their tax to the dominant Muslims, and then there's peace as a result of them having to pay this extra tax. Would you like to know how Jizya, as he pronounced it, is spelled? J-I-Z-Y-A. So this guy is quite concerned that the gays are trying to jizya all over him. We got to stop these gays from jizzing on me. I mean, jizya tax, something. You can come on my face. What? Did I say that out loud? What? What? Dude, let it out. Again, I know every time I do these segments, people attack me, and they're like, come on, you're reading too much into this, man. It's not me, dude. It's not me. And it's not just this segment. With Matt Staver, there's other things he's said, too. And he's just like Brian Fisher and all the other super anti-gay bigots. Dude, he's struggling with it himself. That he's, as Dan Savage says, I think spot on, he's externalizing an internal struggle. He's like, I'm so anti-gay, these gays are really bad, I'm totally not with them. Being gay is a choice and they should stop. Well, why are they saying that it's a choice? Because they view it as a choice. They're attracted to men. And perhaps a little bit to women. Some of them are probably bi. And they're like, okay, so I have to choose. I'm going to make the right godly choice. I'm going to go with the woman, even though I want to go with the man. And they view everybody else as having some sort of moral shortcoming if they end up hooking up with the same sex. Because they think to themselves, God, I want to do that too, but I'm fighting that urge. Why don't they fight it too? Why can't they be miserable with me? Don't jizya on me. Don't give me a jizya tax. these guys are so, it's so funny, there's so many ways in which their, you know, their closetness comes out. It's like, oh, that's why, oh, I see. You're deep in that closet, and you're super fundamentalist. Okay, fucking get over it, man. Your religion is bullshit. Live your life. Be happy. Stop judging other people when they're not hurting anybody else. And the argument's total bullshit, too, obviously. Because he says that, well, non-gays are being taxed by gays because sometimes there's anti-discrimination lawsuits where gay couples were obviously discriminated against, and they want, you know, some sort of way to fix that situation. So somebody gets fined, or there's some sort of civil suit where there's payment. Yet that's exactly what would happen if there was a black couple going into a diner in Mississippi and they said, "We don't serve your can around here, naggers." Well, then there'd be a lawsuit and the black couple would get money, as they should, because they were discriminated against because they're black. That's illegal. That's not okay. In some states, that's not okay with gays either. Unfortunately, it's not like that in all the U.S., but in some states, if you do that, you're going to get the law is going to come down on you because you are discriminating, and that's not okay. So there's no tax here. That's a civilized society acting appropriately when people are being douches and they're acting in a way that's not equal, not being equal under the law. So, but the reality is, if anything, it was the opposite. So it's not like there's a tax from gays on non-gays. Straight people were taxing Muslims. I'm still thinking about jizya or jizya, whatever the fuck it's called. Straight people were taxing gay people. How do I know that? Well, there's all types of tax rights that come with marriage and social security rights and stuff like that. And what would happen is when you didn't allow gay marriage, you would have these gay couples living lives as if they're married, but they're not married. And then when one of them dies or there's an issue in visitation rights at the hospital, they wouldn't be able to have the same rights as straight people. They wouldn't be able to see each other in the hospital. They wouldn't get the same tax rights and inheritance rights and stuff. So that's really a tax from straight people onto gay people because we didn't give them equal marriage. So we've got it exactly backwards, as always, but I don't know what else I would expect from somebody who's really concerned about the gay jizya. Okay, I got two more here, and then perhaps we'll finish early today. I say that every time, but this time I might actually mean it. Okay. Let's go to this gun story, or I should say stories. We have two gun stories that broke over the weekend that are incredibly disheartening and unfortunately very American in nature. So first, Talking Points Memo reports, a man arrested for accidentally shooting a woman at a Washington State movie theater on Friday reportedly told police that he was armed because he feared mass shootings. In a statement to police quoted by the Seattle Times, 29-year-old Dane Gallion said he brought a firearm to a screening of Michael Bay's 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, in Renton because he was concerned about recent mass shootings in public places. I think you can draw your own conclusions based off this. That is the height of irony. I gotta bring a gun. I gotta bring a gun. There's gonna be a shooting. I gotta bring a gun. I gotta protect myself. Whoops, I shot some poor woman in the shoulder. Now, thankfully, she's okay. She's not gonna die or anything like that. But this is what people don't understand. Like, there are statistics about this stuff, about gun ownership, and the reality is, even if you're buying a gun because you think, I need this to protect myself, and sometimes that's perfectly legitimate, right? But even if you do that, you are increasing the likelihood of somebody in your house dying as the result of guns but by a tremendous amount. Why? Because it's much more likely that simply because you have the gun, there could be some kind of accident or there could be some kind of dispute at some point in the future in your house that involves you or a friend or you or an ex-wife or whatever the fuck it is, right? The stats show it simply having a gun in the house increases your likelihood of dying by a gun or getting injured by a gun. So, again, these are facts, inconvenient facts that people don't like to acknowledge if they're demagogues and if they only give a shit about giving pro-gun platitudes that make no sense. So that's the first one. Now, the second story is this. Quote, the husband and son of the owner of a Pearl County, Mississippi gun shop were shot to death Saturday afternoon following an argument with a customer over a $25 repair fee. According to police, a man and his son came to pick up a handgun that was in for repairs and became agitated with the woman who owns the store when he discovered the fee. She called her husband and their son to help deal with the man, and things then took a turn for the worse. After the store owner and his son arrived, the argument escalated, leading to guns being drawn and a shootout, leaving the owner's husband and her son dead. The customer and his son were both taken to a local hospital with serious injuries. Yeah, that's heartbreaking. And it was over something as menial as a $25 registration fee. How many times have we heard of stories like this? How many times have we heard stories of road rage gone haywire, gone wrong, and somebody has a gun and they pull it out in a heated moment and you know what happens next? This is the problem when you have many guns in circulation. Now, understand, guys, I've said it a trillion times. I'll say it a trillion more. I get shit from both sides on this, in the sense that I get shit from the right, who obviously hate that I tell the truth about the Second Amendment and guns in general. But I also get some shit from people who are really left on this, who really want to copy the Japan model and do confiscation. And they understand that this leads to less deaths, period, so we should do it. So I get shit from everybody. I'm a gun moderate. But because I'm in favor of law-abiding citizens having the right to own a gun, okay, if they don't have crazy shit in their background, suspected terrorists or paranoid schizophrenia or laundry list of felonies, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to be honest and accurate about what happens when a society has so many guns in circulation. We have over 300 million guns in circulation. As a direct result of that, there are 32,000 gun deaths in the U.S. That includes everything. You know, homicides is about 10,000 worth of that. But then when you add in suicides and accidents and all that stuff, it gets up to 32,000. That problem simply doesn't exist in other modern nations. It doesn't exist because they don't have that many guns in circulation. Now, what is the answer? I don't think the answer is confiscation. I don't even think that's constitutional. I think the answer is doing a sane approach to regulation, and it requires a bunch of stuff. I said it before, but you need universal background checks. You need stringent rules as to who can get them and who can't get them. You need to make sure you stop terrorists and people with severe mental health issues and former felons from getting guns. You need to do a ban on high-capacity magazines, a ban on certain kinds of assault weapons. I would be in favor of a giant gun buyback program, not so you force people to get rid of their guns, but you make people an offer they can't refuse, and then many of them want to turn in their guns, their spare guns, or what have you. You could even do a tiered permit system where, you know, you're allowed to have more guns in a situation if you're a game warden, so you have to go through the proper step and process in order to get certification for that. There's a lot of things we can do that make sense that would cut back on these horrible statistics. But until we do those things, we're going to keep having stories like this, which are just beyond heartbreaking. Okay, and finally, let's do one more here. The Supreme Court ruled against life in prison without the possibility of parole for juveniles. So the Daily Beast reports on this. The Supreme Court ruled Monday that a 2012 decision banning life without parole sentences for juvenile offenders should be retroactively applied to those sentenced before the ruling. Justices Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito dissented, of course, in the 6-3 decision, with the majority led by Justice Anthony Kennedy. The ruling will affect more than 1,000 people. While the court will not require states to resentence all the convicts, it will allow the affected to be considered for parole. All right, so they go on to explain that they actually already decided this in 2012, but they just decided on Monday, so yesterday, that the ruling can be applied retroactively. Now, is this something that makes sense? Is this something that I agree with? I think it does make sense. I think that life in prison without the possibility of parole for a juvenile there's an argument that that's cruel and unusual. Now, are there crimes committed by juveniles that are beyond horrific that they should get a lot of time in jail? Yeah, we covered stories on this show. I think somebody killed their mom for interrupting their video game session and then fucked the dead body. Unbelievable horrific stuff. That person, I'm totally down with that person being in jail for life. And the only caveat is, as a general rule, should you have it so that if you're a juvenile and you commit a crime, that the possibility of parole is there? Yes. If I'm on that board, am I going to decide to give that guy parole? Fuck no. But as a matter of principle, should you have a system set up where juveniles, since 99.9% of them or 99% of them, you know, aren't that guy, should they have the possibility of parole? Yeah, you should. So, and this is something that, you know, other nations, they've decided that life in prison without the possibility of parole doesn't make sense even for adult criminals. Now, that's something I don't agree with. I think if you're an adult, I am in favor of life in prison without the possibility of parole in certain circumstances. But for juveniles, I think you went a little too far, and I think we're talking about cruel, unusual punishment at that point. We're very punitive in the U.S., man. We spoke about this before with the Obama segment. We've spoken about it in the past. When you have a criminal justice system that leans totally on the side of being punitive and not focused on rehabilitation, what happens as a result of that? Well, we can see the statistics. People just don't get rehabilitated as much. That's it. That's what happens. So now you could be okay with that, but then I question your judgment, because the whole idea of div facilities is to correct, is to try to find a way to take most criminals and fix them, for lack of a better word, make them productive members of society and normal people who aren't a threat to everybody else. And sometimes people are too far gone, but in most cases you probably can do rehabilitation if you just fucking focused on it. But we don't focus on it in the U.S., and any substantive steps to move away from that kind of a system I think makes sense in the long run, and I think is a positive thing. I'm still more moderate on the issue of criminal justice than a lot of other liberals and progressives, but I'm not a moron who's just, lock everybody up and throw away the key. No, you got to be more rational about it, and you got to approach this in a way that makes sense, and I think it's a good first step to say, okay, you know what, juveniles, no more life in prison without the possibility of parole, because that is cruel and unusual, and we can try for better than that, at least with juveniles in this respect. Okay, so I think we have some sort of record here for finishing 5 minutes early with the show. Good googly moogly. So I guess I could do some shameless plugs while I'm sitting here. Might as well. You guys can follow me on Twitter. If you're listening to the live show, probably most of you guys do already, but it's at Kyle Kalinske on Twitter. You can follow Lilith Penn, who, of course, is the fantastic, I guess you could say, social media manager for Secular Talk. At Stardust Lilith is her thing on Twitter. I know a lot of you guys, at least if you're in the chat room for the live show, you probably talked to her a decent amount already, but you can follow her on Twitter as well if you haven't yet. And another thing I get all the time, people ask, like, well, how can we support the show? Honestly, the best way to support the show is if you already use Amazon a lot. I don't know how you guys are with that, but I use it all the time because I'm kind of a lazy prick, and that, you know, is very convenient. But you can use our Amazon link, and it's I think we get 7% of every purchase you make if you use our link, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. I mean, that's tremendous, right? That's like a dream deal. You get to just do your thing and just buy whatever, and it doesn't cost you anything extra, and you just send a little bit to us just for being us. I mean, that's amazing. That's tremendous. So you can – in fact, I'm going to post it, the link, on Twitter when I'm done here. I haven't done that in a million years. But I'll post the link and just bookmark that link and, you know, use it. Use it if you want to purchase stuff online, if you want to purchase stuff through Amazon. If you don't purchase stuff on Amazon, then don't worry about it. I know a lot of people are concerned about their shitty practices. I've seen articles about that stuff too. I don't know if any of them are actually good. Like, I know that Costco does a really good job with stuff, but they're not like an online place where you buy shit. Everybody knows you go to Costco and stuff. I don't know if there's any, like, okay, so Walmart sucks, Kmart sucks, all the other online, like, it all sucks, and Amazon is equally bad as all of them, so I don't know what the answer is to do about that, you know? So, and I understand, if you have a principled thing you don't want to do it, cool, man, no doubt, don't use it, it's whatever. But for those of you who use it already and you don't plan on changing, you might as well use our link to do that. So I'll post it on Twitter when we get out of here. And that'll do it, man. Love you guys. I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have another awesome show for you. Everybody have a great night. Peace. Mwah.